basketball power.
All 12,000 fans here at Bramlage Coliseum spilling out onto the court. A huge celebration as Kansas State, for the first time since 1983, has knocked off the Kansas Jayhawks in Manhattan.
Welcome to Bring On The Podcast. Here's your host, A. Hernali.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bring On The Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Luke Thompson. As you heard there, we got the basketball intro. It's because regular season football is over, so looking ahead to this weekend, Kansas State is playing Washington State in Kansas City. So we've got the Big E on. Eric, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
And we've got Theo Lawson, who's a Washington State reporter for the Lewiston Tribune. Theo, how you doing?
Great, thanks for having me.
And first thing, I guess last time we saw Washington State, they had a guy by the name of Clay Thompson, who was pretty good. But this team, is it fair to say there's no Clay Thompson in this group?
No, it's pretty evident. They have a freshman they like a little bit. I don't know if he's going to turn into Clay. I'm kind of a Warriors fan, so I've been following the games. Oh, yeah. And I think Clay has 17 in the first quarter, so I don't think there's anyone quite resembling anything close to Clay on this roster.
Yeah. I would like to remind everyone that based on Washington State came to Manhattan, Dominique Sutton held Clay to like 4 for 20 shooting or something. Of course, he still scored 23 because he's ridiculous, but, you know, did pretty well in case they won that game. Anyway, let's talk about this year's team. They've got a couple of losses. They're 4-4, and are that San Jose State and New Orleans losses as bad as they seem?
Yeah, you know, funny enough, I wasn't actually at either of those games. I cover Idaho football right now, so I've been pretty busy with that beat as of late. But those are really the only two kind of home games I've missed. But from what it sounds like, talking to the beat reporter that was there that I know pretty well, it's as bad as they've played in the last 2 years. And, of course, San Jose State's a lower-tier Mountain West team, and New Orleans is in the Southland Conference. So those are two bad losses, considering it came at home. And not a lot of people are coming to games right now, so they can't really get a true home court advantage, and it's going to be tough to win those games. And I think it'll be tough to win this next one against Idaho as well.
Yeah, against Kansas. All right, okay, we'll go to Idaho, this week?
Yeah, that's going to be on Wednesday. Idaho's won the last two games in that series, which is a rare winning streak for Idaho in that Battle of the Palouse series, is what they call it. And Washington State's trying to avoid three straight losses to Idaho. That would be, I think, maybe unprecedented in that series if that did happen on Wednesday.
Thanks. Well, you look at this roster. I mean, they've got, I think I saw they returned three of their four scorers. They've got some senior leadership. You know, does that count for anything?
Yeah, I think Josh Hawkinson and Mike Arabu are really the two senior leaders that have been there along with Ernie Kent all 3 years. Josh Hawkinson wasn't really much of a player or wasn't really used a lot as a freshman under Ken Bone, who has been fired. And Ernie Kent's really turned him into a player. As I mentioned to you earlier, he's kind of a stretch forward. He can play the five, he can play the four, really play maybe the 3-2, but they kind of really use him as a four or a five. And I think he's 7 double-doubles away from the all-time record at Washington State, which I believe is 56. So he can really do a lot of damage on the court. He's almost bound to get a double-double in every game he plays in.
Yeah.
He can't really ever take over a game and really win you a game with 30, 40 points type of thing. But he has kind of been the senior leader of this team, along with Ike Arabu, who's a third-year player under Ernie Kent, kind of a guard who's played the one and the two. They kind of like him off the ball more these days, but yeah, those are kind of the two senior leaders. And then Connor Clifford, who's been there 2 years now. This is his second year. He's kind of another leader for this team.
Yeah. And real quick, I have to ask, did you say Ken Bone, like the guy who was at the debate?
Okay. different Ken Bone, but I guess there was a lot of confusion when that was happening. The Seattle Times actually talked to Ken Bone, I think, the next morning after that, and wrote a really funny story. And, of course, Ken Bone, Washington State Ken Bone, who's now an assistant at Gonzaga, was well aware of it. And that's a story to look up if you guys are interested.
That sounds fun. Well, Eric, speaking of senior leadership, it seems like DJ has really come to play this season. How impressed have you been with him so far?
I'll tell you what, DJ Johnson has really been steady from the get-go, but these last three games, starting with that game against Maryland and following up with Green Bay and then at St. Louis this last weekend, he's just been insane. He comes out and scores 26 against Maryland, puts up a double-double with 21 and 10 against St. Louis. I mean, if this is something that we can count on, through the rest of the non-conference and into the conference season, it's definitely it's miles ahead of any expectations out there for DJ at this point, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I haven't really watched enough to know. When he's on, it seems like normally he's attacking the basket, he's getting rebounds and putbacks. Has he been hitting any jump shots or?
He's been stepping out to 5'7", maybe 10 feet, but all of his damage is really being done right at the rim. Whether it's putbacks or he's really developed some good footwork and being able to create scoring opportunities down low, finding people when he gets doubled up. The thing that's that he suffered from a little bit earlier in the season, the first couple of games, was getting used to some of the points of emphasis on cleaning up play in the post and trying to stay out of foul trouble. He had some limited minutes the first couple of games, but now that he's been able to keep himself on the court, he's just been tearing things up on the block.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great to see. Still, you worry a little bit that somewhere down the road, having him as your best big man at 6'8", 6'9", you're going to run into some problems with heights. Does Washington State have any guys that can bang inside and take advantage of maybe a smaller team?
Yeah. Connor Clifford, the senior that I mentioned earlier, he's their biggest body, only averaging 10 points a game right now, 3 rebounds a game. He can't play a lot of minutes. He's more of a bigger player, 7 feet, 260, so you can't really give him a lot of minutes. But when he's in there, he can be effective. Had his career high, I believe, against Creighton in a tournament at St. Thomas, in the Virgin Islands, and that was kind of really surprising because he had never really done anything like that. And so the fact that he can score like that against a team like Creighton, I believe, had 28 points in that game, maybe more than that. He has the potential to really kind of be a load for opposing teams if you don't have someone that's really between 6'8 and 7 feet. I think he can give teams trouble. He hasn't been consistent enough for me to believe that he's really going to be a headache for other teams consistently, but he has shown the potential, and like I said, he's just huge. And if you don't have somebody who can guard him, he's got a lot of finesse and can kind of really put him shots down low, and has turned into a decent player, and I think has some potential.
What about on the other end, K-State's got some athletes that'll be attacking the rim. I noticed Connor's only got like 6 or 7 blocks this year. Is he a guy you can get in foul trouble? How does he do?
Maybe a little bit, but they don't really have a rim protector this year. They had one last year, Valentine Azundu, who was really one of the best shot blockers in the nation, and he transferred to San Diego State, and he's playing there now. Has actually played for Houston, Washington State, and San Diego State, so he's kind of been everywhere. But that's kind of why they brought him in last year. They lose him, and you don't really have anybody who can protect the rim. So I think bigger, more athletic teams can give him trouble. Josh Hawkinson can't really guard huge guys and it really isn't strong enough to kind of hold his own against some of the better athletes in the Pac-12. So they can kind of leave that up to Connor Clifford to do that. And he's a pretty heady player, pretty smart player. He's not going to really try to get himself into foul trouble. I don't think Granny Kent would let him, but I think they can't. I think they will have trouble guarding opposing big men this year.
Yeah. And Eric, speaking of rim protection, that's always a concern for Kansas State. I think it's gotten better now that Stephen Hurd is gone. But what kind of improvement have you seen there?
The one nice thing from a rim protection standpoint is that's one of the things DJ Johnson's really bringing to the table this year. He's up over 2 blocks a game right now, which is one of the best blocks per game in the Big 12. Just envisioning that matchup between Connor Clifford and DJ Johnson in that game. I'm not super familiar with Clifford, so I don't know if he does that much rim protection from off of the ball. But DJ Johnson this year is one of those guys that he's not having really that much of an issue with good defenders on him. He's been able, he's pretty squirmy. Like I said, he's got good footwork, so he's been able to get to the bucket. He's pretty strong. He's left-handed, which goes a long ways, just keeping people off balance. Being able to finish it with contact and draw the 3-point play. But we really haven't run up against anybody that would be coming over to block shots off the ball, you know, that secondary rim protector. It might be interesting to see if Clifford and DJ end up getting split up, if Clifford can start to provide a little bit better defense against DJ down in the post.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, on the perimeter, K-State's got some pretty good athletes, between Snead and, you know, Kamau Stokes and Barry Brown can all be decent defenders. You know, how do the Washington State guards handle pressure, handle the ball?
Yeah, they have a few guys who can do it. Malachi Flynn is a true freshman. He's their point guard. And it's really nice for Washington State and Ernie Kent that they don't have to make Ike Arabi the point guard. He was playing a lot of point guard last year. He's a senior, but he can be careless with the ball. I believe he had four turnovers in the first few minutes of the last game that I covered. And they kind of subbed him out, and he kind of plays too fast for his own good. He's a really athletic player. But really, it's kind of out of control. So bringing Malachi Flynn in, he was the 4A Player of the Year in the state of Washington last year. Someone not a lot of Pac-12 schools really wanted, including the University of Washington, which is about 30 miles away from where he lives in Tacoma. I think it was a really good pickup for Ernie Kent. He's a really great ball handler. He's not going to make a lot of mistakes, and he's really kind of proven to be a scorer for them too. He can shoot and. He's really the distributor that they needed last year. They kind of had to put Ike Arabu into that point guard spot, but now they have Arabu playing off the ball. He can still handle it, but they have a real true point guard in Malachi Flynn.
Mm-hmm. Sounds almost like a Willis Bradley situation in Kansas State. It would have been better with him at the two, but sort of was forced to put him at the one.
Right. Yeah, one of the things for the game to me that'll be interesting to watch is Washington State's coming into this game with an assist to turnover ratio as a team under one, and K-State is they're forcing a lot of turnovers on their opponents. They've got three teams I think so far this year that they've forced over 20, and they're averaging over 17 a game. So it'll be interesting to see if that actually becomes a primary theme of the game, to see if K-State can get a bunch of easy points off of turnovers.
Yeah. And it's been so great to see a point guard who's, Kamau Stokes, seems to be really handling the ball pretty well. You know, he can score when you need it. You know, not necessarily a Jacob Poland score or anything like that, but taking care of the ball pretty well. Do you think that's something that's going to continue against several opponents?
I think it'll keep up. You know, one of the things that I think that Stokes, as well as Brown and Dean Wade, to a certain extent, is they've got they played pretty much the entire season last year as freshmen. Just being sophomores this year, you know, they've got a lot of experience under the belt. Kamau Stokes is doing a lot of really good things right now, not just handling the ball, but shooting the ball as well, really picking his moments. And strangely enough, is our best 3-point shooter, which I wouldn't have guessed coming into the season.
Yeah, that's good. Back to Washington State, I got to ask about a guy you haven't mentioned yet, but he started his high school career anyway at Wichita East, and I think he started a few games at Darian King. So what does he do for the Cougars?
Yeah, he's really a true 3-point shooter, maybe the best 3-point shooter on the team. Malachi is looking pretty good from the perimeter, but Darian's he kind of reminds you a lot of a player that they had a few years ago. He was a senior when Ernie Kent was in his first year. Dexter Koenig drew an Australian guy who was lengthy and really kind of had length on opponents and could really shoot it over them and really kind of made his threes at a pretty high clip. Darian King's a lot like Dexter Koenig drew in that way, and he's really kind of a cerebral player, is a smart player, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I don't think he's a guy you can count on for you know 15, 20 points a game or anything like that, but he can kind of have his little scoring binges, and I think they really need a 3-point shooter that they can rely on. They kind of like to spread the floor and run up and down the floor. Obviously he can do that with them. So if he can get open and do it enough, I think he can be dangerous.
Yeah. And as far as like a 3-point shooter for Kansas State, I mean, Eric, if you're calling up a play and you need a three at the end of the game, who are you giving the ball to?
That's a great question. I can't say that I trust anybody enough to take that shot right now if we need a three. I guess out of everybody, even though he's not the statistically the best three-point shooter on the team, I'd put that ball in Barry Brown's hands.
I think he'd be the most confident guy for sure.
What's that?
He'd be the most confident guy for sure. Maybe
you know, he's the guy that I would be the most confident that he could get the shot off.
Yeah.
Out of all of our shooters, statistically, Kamau Stokes is the best three-point shooter on the team. He's shooting almost 43% for the season. But across the entire team, K-State is shooting just a smidge under 40%. It's like 39.5 or something like that,
which is about 10 points better than last year, right?
Yeah, last year we finished the season right at about 30. So that's one of the things watching the game so far this year that I can tell right off the bat is this team it's more locked in. They can make shots where last year it was just kind of you chucked it up and hoped it went in.
Yeah. It seems like, I don't know, Stokes is more of reminds me a little bit of Clint Stewart, who would, you know, shoot a really high percentage of three because he was very selective about his shots. He wasn't going to force anything.
He's very selective about his shots. Kamau Stokes does have the tendency to start shooting some heat check shots every now and then. Frankly, that's probably about a third of his misses are ones that, you know, after he's made one or two or three in a game, he'll start putting a few more up, and those are the ones that that don't find the net. But I think Kamau Stokes is actually finding a lot of good opportunities, because if you go down the K-State offensive repertoire there, he's just not the first option from shooting a three-point shot. You know, you're going to think of Barry Brown. Frankly, you're going to think of Xavier Sneed right now. Xavier Sneed is just we can come back to him a little bit later. You know, you even still think of Dean Wade, even though he's not making it at a really high clip. You know, those are the guys that are jumping out at you that you would think to make or to take that three-pointer before Kamau Stokes.
And there was some talk at the beginning of the season that B. West is improving his three-point shot, but his best game still got to be attacking the basket, right?
His best game is just playing basketball. Whether it's attacking the basket or it's really just playing basketball in the sense that makes sense to him. You know, it's slashing to the bucket. It's playing in the paint. It's taking that mid-range shot. It's finding good passes. It's all over the court. He's really that jack of all trades, master of none type basketball player that you want to see all over the basketball court. Yeah.
And so, I mean, it seems like K-State is playing pretty confident right now. 7-1 a game. They almost won against Maryland. They only lost. On the other side, Washington State, what do you feel like the psyche of this team is right now, Theo?
Well, I know just listening to the last few press conferences and post-game news conferences, they just lack energy right now, and they're not getting it from their crowd, which I mentioned, and that they were kind of drawing less than 500 people to their home games, and that's not really what you expect for a Pac-12 team. Even though it is the non-conference season, you kind of expect a Pac-12 school to draw more fans, and they should be able to rely on home crowd, but at the same time, you're not really going to draw a lot of fans if you're not winning games and losing them to teams like New Orleans and San Jose State. Right now, I think they are lacking confidence. I think they do need a good win under their belt to kind of get the confidence back. I see a few games still in the non-conference that should be winnable games. Really, three of the next four, not including Kansas State, I think can be winnable games for them. So I think picking up a win against Idaho, potentially, that still is a rivalry game that there should be a good crowd if they can win that game. And then at least play K-State close. You know, I think that they would kind of build the confidence back up. They're certainly going to need it for a Pac-12 play. They start off with a road game at UW. That'll be a tough game for them, a rivalry game on January 1st. So right now the confidence isn't too high, that they're not kind of creating their own energy like they need to. And it's kind of sad to watch, but at the same time, you know, one win can change that for a bunch of college players.
Yeah. So given all that, I mean, you think in Kansas City you have a good K-State crowd. If the Cats can really get off to a good start, they could maybe put them away early.
Yeah. It kind of seems that way. I think if you're Washington State, you can maybe find some moral victories in this game if a few different players kind of step up and hold their own against Kansas State. I think that can give them confidence, and it's not a game that they're probably expecting to win. So because the bar is set pretty low, I think if they can do some of those things, then build the confidence back up and then take that into their final two non-conference games, which are both at home, Santa Clara and Sacramento State. So it's going to be a good test for them just to kind of see the kind of competition that they're going to see in the Pac-12 coming up. And I think that's why you schedule a team like Kansas State. You know, they've already seen Creighton, so they've seen a few good non-conference foes, and I think that'll prepare them for the Pac-12, even if they don't win. And I don't think most are expecting them to.
Yeah. What about so? And Eric can correct me if I'm wrong here, but you know, K-State, it's a little more athletic this year, maybe, but still largely going to play kind of grind it out. They're going to be more comfortable in the 60s, maybe low 70s. It seems like Washington State's maybe scoring a little more. You know, what kind of tempo do they want to play this game at?
Washington State likes to play with tempo. That's kind of what Ernie Kent bases his system around, and that's what works for him at Oregon, worked for him at St. Mary's. He had guards who could kind of run the ball up and down the court, play good defense, and then get out on the fast break and make the easy buckets. So they're not doing that really well right now. That they're playing fast, but they're not finishing on the other end when they can play defense, get the rebound and push the ball. But that's kind of something that Ernie Kent's built his brand around, and they actually did that pretty well his first year. They had a few guys who could run the system better last year. They were kind of molding their system for the guys they had. A few of those guys left, and now they're really trying to kind of play with tempo again and reinstall that offense that worked so well for them 2 years ago, and then when Ernie Kent was at Oregon and had a lot of those really successful NCAA tournament teams, and before that at St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, Eric, what's your sense on what tempo K-State wants to play?
Well, I would say that you're probably right that last year I would have said the lower the score we can keep it, the better off K-State's going to be. I think this year I really think they're going to be shooting for 70 points. You know, that's low in consideration of the entire landscape of college basketball, but it's higher than it would have than our success point would have been last year. I think K-State's playing with roughly about the same tempo as they did last year, but they're more efficient in scoring the basketball. Which is helping. You know, the only thing that would scare me right now against Washington State next weekend is really if it's tight and it comes down to free throw shooting at the end of the day, because we've already seen one instance where free throw shooting kind of let the squad down, and as a whole they're only shooting about 63% as a team from the line. So it's not something that you're really you've got warm and fuzzies about late in the game.
Yeah. And that actually seems to be a strength for Washington State. I saw they're shooting 76%. They're pretty good from
They have a bunch of guys who I think you're confident with going to the line. Hawkinson's probably the best three-point shooter on this team. Right now, Charles Callison's at 94%. He's not going to play quite as much, but you're pretty confident with most of those guys going to the line. You know, I think Hawkinson's even really better than an 83% shooter. I think he could probably get up to 87 or so this year if he has a good year. You know, Ike Arebu, you probably don't want him on the line if you can get the ball to Malachi Flynn or Josh Hawkinson. But they have enough players who you're confident with. If that does happen to be the scenario, I'd be shocked if Washington State was shooting free throws for the win late in that game this week. But if that does happen to be the case, they've been pretty lights out from the line this year.
Yeah, and Bruce Weber's record in close games doesn't exactly inspire confidence either.
So. No, it really doesn't, and I kind of share that I share that sentiment that if the game was being played in Pullman, then I could see it possibly being a close game coming down to the end, maybe shooting free throws for a game. But you know, with the game being in Kansas City, it's going to be so close to a home game for K-State that I really don't see it coming down to the wire.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the coaches a little bit, because you sort of alluded to it. Ernie Kent has a fairly similar career arc to Bruce Weber in that, you know, they both started at mid-majors, kind of made their name there, did well, moved up to a bigger school, did well for a while, but then sort of became mediocre, were eventually fired. And then you know, I guess the difference is Bruce Weber was picked up immediately. Ernie Kent had, I think, a couple of years between Oregon and Washington State, right?
Yeah, he kind of went on a little hiatus and actually worked for the Pac-12 networks for a few years. Was an analyst and then got hired here 3 years ago, I guess, or three seasons ago, including this season after Ken Bone got fired. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, we've talked a lot about the thoughts on Bruce Weber, and the reaction to him, even from the beginning, was not very good. You know, what were the thoughts in Pullman when they got Ernie Kent, and how do they feel about him now?
You know, I think people were pretty excited about Ernie Kent. Obviously, had a lot of success at Oregon. You know, that you would imagine that kind of bodes well just because the Cougars play in the Pac-12. And so he knows how to recruit the Northwest. He's had to do it already. So maybe he still has those ties and really has an exciting brand of basketball if it's played right. You know, they haven't played like that a lot his 3 years here. But you kind of remember that the first game they played against Oregon 2 years ago, his first game against Oregon since they fired him, and that game was in Pullman, and they ended up scoring over 100 points. I think both teams scored over 100. The building was rocking, and Washington State ended up winning that game. Actually, that's probably still his signature win in his time at Pullman. But you know, people were excited. Ernie Kent's a really excitable guy. He's pretty energetic. He's really kind of always encouraged the fans to come and has invited the fans to practices and things like that that other coaches don't do a lot. He actually had the media over for a film session earlier this year and kind of went through their tour in Italy with us and kind of pointed things out on film, which was pretty neat. So he kind of understands the media aspect of it and really, really an energetic guy and good to us especially. So that's always nice. But people were excited. Now, of course, they're kind of waiting for him to start winning again, and that there's no real sign as to when that's going to happen. But initially, yeah, people loved Aaron, and it seemed like a great hire at the time.
Yeah, and I guess, I don't know, there's probably a lot of reasons that Bruce Weber didn't get that kind of reception. Partly just he doesn't have the energy like that. Obviously, his personality is almost abrasive sometimes with the media. His voice plays into that. I don't know, I guess probably a big part of it was Kansas State had set the bar probably a lot higher than Washington State has set it, because they were only a couple years removed from the Elite Eight appearance and everything like that. Wouldn't you say, Eric? Is that a big part of it?
I think that was a big part of it. I think that Bruce Weber's personality and his mentality and the way he approaches the game was such a vast difference from before with Frank Martin. And you know, I think people really latched on to Frank Martin's style of, you know, effort above all. Is what wins games, and frankly, he was successful with it. I think there was just the way the whole Frank Martin and John Curry and everything like that kind of fell out, left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths. You know, I think the general reaction of Bruce Weber has all along been one of, we're okay with it, but we're not thrilled with it. We feel like we could do better. And honestly, you know, this season is a good example of that. You know, there's still a lot of feeling of, okay, but you know, we're K-State's 7-1, and I bet across the board you'd get a consensus that that his seat is still very much warm right now.
Yeah, definitely, and probably even part of that goes back to, you know, the pre, you know, Asbury years. But when K-State has sustained success for a while, I don't know much about Washington State's history. Have they had much basketball success at any point?
They've been to a few tournaments in the last decade, and really before Ken Bone got hired, Tony Bennett was the coach there, obviously at Virginia now, and I believe still at Virginia, and had a lot of success under him. Went to the tournament. Of course, when you have a guy like Clay Thompson, you're always going to have a success with him. Went to the Final Four of the NIT. I wasn't covering the team then, but went to the Final Four of the NIT with Clay Thompson. They ended up losing to Wichita State. So they have had success. They haven't really been able to sustain it, though. And, of course, the Pac-12 is always going to be a hard conference to compete in recruiting-wise. And you just don't really have the same media market in Pullman. So you're not going to get the same recruits that a USC, a UCLA, or even a UW or the Bay Area schools are going to get. So it's been hard to sustain it. But they have proven that they can have it at times. They just kind of need the right group of players. And they haven't had that under Ernie Kent yet. But I think he still has some time left. I don't think his seat is too hot right now, and I think they're going to let it play out a few more years at least.
Yeah, certainly that being kind of middle of nowhere, not a recruiting hotbed, the coaches in Manhattan can relate to that as well. Another interesting connection, of course, between the two schools is Washington State just recently stole Kansas State's president. You know much about Kirk Schultz and what he's bringing to Washington State?
I know a little bit about him. He's he's really active on Twitter, which is kind of the funny part about it. And he really kind of connects with the students well and connects with, I think, the younger kids. So you know, that's always a positive when you have a president who can do that. People were really very fond of Elson Floyd, who was their president. He passed away And that's when they hired Kirk Schultz. So it's kind of a really hard president to follow. But I think so far Kirk Schultz has done well, and I think they seem to like him. He's pretty positive. He's pretty involved in athletics. Just had a bet with the UW president over the Apple Cup, so that was kind of fun to follow. And he's kind of engaged in it, so that's a positive. Other than that, I don't know a ton. Like I mentioned, I don't cover Wazoo full time. Cover a lot of Idaho football in the fall, so I kind of only follow Washington State peripherally during the football season. But I think he's generally had a good view so far.
Yeah, well, that's good. We certainly wish President Schultz well. He brought a lot to Kansas State, not just in athletics. And, you understand presidents move on to different challenges. So, but I would say he left on pretty good terms, wouldn't you say, Eric?
Absolutely. Kirk Schultz had probably one of the it was the highest amount of growth that the University of Kansas State has ever seen. You just look at the construction projects on campus and the facilities that were built, not just sports related, but across all the academic portions of the university, the research facilities, everything like that. K-State's never seen that kind of growth in its history. He was amazing for K-State. Hopefully he can do the same things for Washington State. One of the things that a lot of people that actually really liked about him was how engaging he was with the students, with the alumni, with the fans of K-State and everything like that. Almost to a fault, almost to a point where you're just like, dude, shut up and do your job, get off of Twitter. It's really good to see someone that can come out of that presidential house and really connect with the people.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I think that's about it here. I'm trying to wrap it up. I do want to ask you real quick, Theo, since you cover Idaho football, that means you got to see Washington back in September. Do you think the Huskies can surprise people and give Alabama a game?
Obviously I haven't seen Alabama, but from what I've seen UW twice, I actually got to help the Tribune cover the Apple Cup, Washington State Washington game. So I've seen them twice, and then they just looked so dominant both times. And I think they can probably hold Alabama's offense to a low scoring total. And I'm not sure how much their offense is going to be able to do against Alabama's defense, but it seems like it could be an intriguing matchup. You really haven't seen Washington against a team like Alabama or anything close to it all season, just because their non-conference schedule consisted of Rutgers, Portland State, and Idaho. So that's kind of what most people knocked UW for. But they've looked really dominant in almost every one of their Pac-12 games, aside from the loss to USC. And I believe Arizona somehow played them close early this year. But they've just looked so dominant that you've got to believe that they have a chance. And I think their secondary is one of the better units in the nation. Of course, Jake Browning's was considered a possible Heisman candidate for a lot of the season. They've got a great running back in Miles Gaskin and just a lot of really athletic receivers. So I think it could be intriguing. Of course, I'd still probably take Bama in the game just because they're Bama. They've always had that success when they've had time to prepare for a game. So I think it could be intriguing, and I'll certainly be tuned into it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no such thing as moral victories in a semifinal, but it would be cool if Washington State could just keep it close, really. And I think I speak for all Kansas State fans when I say it would be cheering for UW. Got to cheer for the little guy.
Absolutely.
All right, well, yeah, and well, of course, Kansas State finished up their football season. Got a big bowl game coming against AM. We'll talk about that a lot in the next two podcasts, I'm sure. Go ahead and wrap this one up. So, Eric, thanks for coming on.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and Theo, appreciate your insight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Maybe I'll see you in the Yakima Valley one of these days here.
Yeah, for sure. And can people follow you on Twitter if they want to read Washington State stuff?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's at Theo Lawson _Trib. That's TRIB. So, yeah, give me a follow. I don't know if I'll be tweeting from the Kansas State game, but throughout the season, if you're interested in Wazoo basketball, there might be a few people who are that this year. I'll certainly be covering them.
Or Idaho football, right?
Yeah, Idaho football. I'll be at the Idaho Potato Bowl on December 22nd. So
there you go.
Covering the heck out of that for sure.
Who do they play?
They play Colorado State.
Colorado State. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bowl reunion between Paul Petrino and Mike Bobo. They're both no cords in the SEC at the same time. So that'll be fun matchup.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Theo. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Awesome. Bye now.